Welcome to Transition State. Good evening, radio fans. That was The Bell Game, their track Ritual, and we started with Late Riser by the Abramson Singers. So welcome to Transition State. We got a good show for you this week. This week I'll be talking to Stephanie Garland, ace member of the UBC Faculty of Pharmaceutical Sciences student body and current research technology advancement scientist at some life science meaning of life lab. So stay tuned for that interview. First, let's hear some more music. Here's The Crackling. Shallow, cold, and empty.
Blueprint Live, the Georgia Strait, and CITR present Bad Bad Not Good with special guest Soba Toa, Tuesday, August 12th at Venue Nightclub. Plus DJs Flip Out and Wreck. Doors are at 9 p.m. Advance tickets on sale now at Red Cat and Zulu Records or online at bplive.ca.
Queer Arts Festival, Regenerations, takes place in Vancouver from July 23rd to August 9th at the Roundhouse. This annual celebration brings together queer art from 27 nations, featuring 18 days of compelling exhibitions, transformative performances, and inspiring workshops. Experience the revolutionary power of art through cross-generational collaborations, artistic healing, and works of art from around the world. Tickets are now on sale at Little Sisters on Davie Street and online. Visit queerartsfestival.com. Regenerations. Dare to be challenged. Risk being changed.
When you're lazy, forget yourself. When you're weak, irrational, I am called from asleep. I'm yours. To the nimble and the strong, I pay respect from the sick and the weak. I take it, oh brothers, we prune each other. Demons and the gods,
we're back. That was Rika, her song Grasslands from the album Kodiak. Now, earlier this week, I sat down with one of the smartest people in my class, and also one of the smartest people I've ever met, Stephanie Garland. Let's hear what she had to say. Welcome, Stephanie.
Thank you.
How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks.
Okay. First, I'd like to ask you about your job.
Okay, what would you like to know?
What is your job for the summer?
So I'm currently working as a research lab in a model organism genetics lab at the at UBC in the Life Sciences Institute. So my principal investigator, his name is Don Moorman, and we work on the roundworm C. elegans. So my personal project that I'm working on with some others in the lab is we're working on a drug discovery project. Basically, what we're doing is we've developed a method to a high throughput method to screen large numbers of compounds using the whole worm. So basically, what we do is we incubate the worms in these huge compounds of drugs, and we're able to look for endpoints like mortality and like reduced movement and decreased fecundity, or like the reproductive quality of the worms. And we're the libraries that we're working on are basically we've screened over 30,000 compounds so far, and they're not drugs that are currently in use. They're basically fragments of chemistry that are produced by large companies for screening purposes.
Any interesting results?
We've narrowed it down using our current. Using the current libraries that we've found to, we have our top three drugs that we're looking at and that we're doing further tests on. And some are proving better than others. It's interesting to see them, and we're working on tests now to try and determine how they work and to really ensure that it's actually new chemistry and that it's not just working on the same pathway as other drugs that are already currently on the market. And so that process will take us quite a while. And while we're doing that, our aim is to actually coordinate to get other libraries of drugs and continue the screening process so that we can really find the best candidates.
Have you found something that kills that ringworm?
Actually, it's a roundworm.
Roundworm?
Yeah, so ringworms are slightly different than nematodes that we work on. But we have definitely found several different compounds. We had a list of we have about a 1% hit rate by the time we finish our screening process. So we had many compounds that were able to kill the worm, but there are other factors that make it useful in to continue. So for instance, like we take our list of candidates that showed through the screening process that they were able to kill the worms that we work on, and then we look to see whether they've been well studied or whether they have current patents by other companies or whether they're really similar to currently known drugs, and so that makes them uninteresting for us. And through doing that, we narrow it down. So we ended up having about 20 compounds that were sort of worth further investigation.
And when you say 1% hit rate, you basically just try a whole bunch of random things and 1 in 100 kills these?
Approximately, yeah.
Okay. Is there already a drug that kills roundworms?
Yeah. There is a drug that's currently available. It's called ivermectin.
Okay.
And there are other drugs as well, like, for instance, albendazole, we learned about in class, is another antiparasitic drug that's often used. But ivermectin is the primary drug. And currently, the World Health Organization gives out ivermectin to developing countries more or less for free. The problem, though, with this kind of widespread use of ivermectin to try and control these parasitic diseases is the development of resistance. Mm. And resistance to ivermectin and also to albendazole and other anti-helminthics or antiparasitic drugs is becoming quite widespread. And so there's a need to develop new drugs to treat this problem. However, there isn't an economic driving force for big pharma to create these drugs, because currently the World Health Organization is giving out ivermectin, right? So, you know, it's not, there is no monetary gain to create something new. So that's why it's kind of been thrust into the public sector for academics to try and find new leads and provide something that might be worthwhile further development. And that's how my lab got involved with the, it's called the Initiative for, or sorry, it's called the Global Initiative for Neglected Diseases, mm-hmm. that that is used to join labs together and create a way for labs to collaborate in order to try and push and further the development of drugs or other research interests that may eventually help neglected diseases.
Does it seem like the approach of, well, let me contrast two approaches. So one approach is to sort of analyze how one drug works,
mm-hmm.
say with ivermectin.
Yeah.
So analyze the structure, analyze the mechanism of action, see these how resistance is occurring, and then maybe change something in the drug structure to not allow that, or add something that overcome that. On the one hand, and on the other hand, trying a whole bunch of random things and seeing what works.
Right.
So you said you sort of your lab applies that second way. Does it seem sort of non-scientific?
I think that there comes a point where brute force is almost a necessity, and it's a means to an end. So it definitely makes logical sense to try and adjust currently known chemistry to work in a better way. However, there's a few problems with this. The first is a problem of patenting. Mm. Most big pharma companies that have one molecule that they're interested in will often in the development process, create multiple derivatives of that molecule and test them all. For ones showing pharmaceutical benefit, they usually patent them all, or at least many that that could be useful. And so that limits the ability of in our lab to really make use of those alternate compounds, because if we can't really follow up anything that's already been patented, because well, it's not our intellectual right. The other problem is that there comes a point in time where there's only so much you can do by changing the substituents on a drug. You can help to reduce resistance. You can help to improve the ability of a drug to cross the intestinal barrier or to cross the blood-brain barrier, things like that. However, sometimes the resistance is too far gone to really make that useful. For instance, a lot of the resistance comes from a molecule or a family of molecules of P glycoproteins. And basically what these do are efflux pumps. They push drugs out of cells, and they work on a huge variety of structures. Basically, they're used by the body to remove anything that shouldn't be there or seems different, to try and get it out and reduce toxicity. And so if a drug is being targeted or being if a drug is being acted on by these efflux pumps, it's unlikely that changing one substituent will be able to overcome that problem. And so at this point, the problems with resistance are bad enough that it's really the time to look for new chemistry and something that's working in a different way on a different pathway, so that we can really start from a place where there isn't current resistance and hopefully buy us some time. And so that's when the brute force approach comes in. That's why we have developed this high throughput method. So it basically enables us to screen huge compounds huge libraries of compounds in a very short period of time, in a very efficient way, so that it basically can reduce the amount of time that's needed to utilize this brute force approach and really get to the part afterwards where you're looking at candidates and you're furthering along research and development.
Okay. Okay, so do you consider yourself a scientist?
I think that scientist is such a tricky word, because I think that anyone who really engages in science in any kind of field is technically a scientist, right?
Okay.
Any form of research that you're doing that involves a scientific field, you're basically a scientist. I consider myself a researcher. I consider myself to the work that I do helps to further the research of my lab and to further our interests. I would consider myself a researcher more than a basic scientist, because personally my eventual interests lie more in clinical care than in basic science. But I'd say researcher for myself more than scientist, though both would be valid.
Okay, let me ask you some quick questions about to determine whether you're a scientist.
Okay.
So you don't need to expand or anything.
Okay.
Do you look through a microscope?
Yes.
Do you look at liquids changing color in a test tube?
No.
Do you formulate hypotheses?
Yeah.
Do you have a lab coat?
No, not really. I only use my lab coat when I'm in the pharmacy.
Can't you get contaminated with roundworms on your clothes?
C. elegans is a non-parasitic roundworm. So even if you were to accidentally ingest it, it wouldn't cause any problems for you.
Well, I think it's time to listen to some music. Is there anything you'd like to hear?
One of my favorite songs this summer is called Proof by Paramore.
Truth?
It's called Proof.
Proof. Okay.
By Paramore.
Proof by Paramore.
Yeah.
On CITR 101.9.
Yeah. Okay.
It's really hard.
Back on the unnecessary pressure. Come off the edge just so you know we
So let's transition a bit. If you could change one thing about the way we practice pharmacy, what would it be?
For me personally, I wish that there was a better way or a more prevalent way to incorporate pharmacogenomic evidence into our daily practice. We have clinical guidelines for certain drugs, like codeine, for instance, mm-hmm. and we can hope that for the most part these are being used, but there's just so much more out there that could be developed on, and it's just really being underutilized right now.
Right. So are you envisioning, like, the pharmacist swabbing your cheek and analyzing your DNA there, or are you talking everybody's genetics?
I really think it's only a matter of time until we all get sequenced.
Because you can't use pharmacogenomic data if
unless you have a sequence, yeah. I mean, currently the cost of a sequence ranges between $2,000 to $5,000, depending on, like, where you go to do it and the number of samples you're doing. There's often bulk discounts. They want to say that it'll be $1,000. It's not there yet. It will be soon. And I think that at some point there's going to be a shift to sequencing everyone and having that information available. We're already shifting to having electronic health files, and that's something that I'm sure is going to get pushed further in the coming years. And it wouldn't be that much of a stretch of the imagination to see sequence data also being available through those electronic profiles. And then it's really just a matter of you know, that's how you'd have access to the information. And at that point, it's really a matter of developing methods to make that information readable to your average physician or your average pharmacist, because most people aren't going to have really specific, like, the ability to just, you know, read a sequence and know what that means. We need ways to decode that information in ways that are useful and efficient.
So can you think of an example of, say, a person has been sequenced, they have their file right there, and the pharmacist can, you know, do something better with that data?
Yeah, for sure. You know, using one of the drugs that I'm more familiar with, for instance, codeine, there are different levels of metabolizers based on your genotype. So you can have people who are ultra-rapid metabolizers, and they will have basically they're more likely to get side effects from the drug. And you can have intermediate metabolizers, and you can have you can also have poor metabolizers, and these poor metabolizers are unlikely to get an effect from the drug because they're unable to metabolize it effectively. And so, for instance, codeine is hugely prescribed mm-hmm. in Canada,
yep.
you know, postoperatively for any kind of aches and pains, you know, even it's available over the counter, you know. And so if we had that kind of sequence data available, and even if it wasn't being used in the physician's office, even if the pharmacist just had it available, you know, you could see, you could look through and, you know, find the part of the sequence that is being affected or has an effect on codeine metabolism, and see whether they're more likely to get an effect or not. And then based on that, it might be something that you could contact a physician to change the recommended drug, or it might be something that you just need to counsel the patient on, that, you know, you're based on your genotype, you're more likely to have this side effect, and this is what you should be watching out for. Or, you know, based on your metabolism, the likelihood that this drug will work for you is less, so you need to be monitored more closely.
So what you're saying is, now, sort of the way they do it is, you know, with all the variants in the population, they sort of pick the average, which is basically a Tylenol 3,
mm-hmm.
and they say sort of every 4 to 6 hours, and then,
yeah.
you know, they work within that, and if you're experiencing side effects, okay, give us a call, or if it's not working, okay, we'll up the dose.
Yeah.
So move from that towards right away, within a minute, being able to see, oh, this is going to hit you really hard, let's lower the dose.
Exactly, right? Rather than starting from average and working towards an individualized dose, starting from an individualized dose and then adjusting as needed.
Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah. I really personally believe that it's the future of the medical practice, and that it's really one of the things that our field is going to work towards. It's really just a matter of finding the right tools to utilize it, because we have sequence data available. It's not widespread yet because it's still quite expensive, but we have research, we have the sequence data, we have the basic resources there, but what we need are the tools to bridge the gap.
Okay, now I'd like to shift gears and ask you about some other stuff.
So, okay.
First of all, do you consider pharmacy to be art or science?
Oh, but it's both. How can you pick just one?
Okay, so let's talk about the art of pharmacy.
Okay.
So in pharmacy, it tends to be people with a scientific background.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think there's any room for people with an artistic background to be pharmacists?
Sure. I think that the reason people come from a scientific background, for the most part, is because that's the way our school system works. You know, you start in the field that you think you're going to be interested in, and you continue and you go forth. I think it would be more challenging from an academic standpoint for people with artistic backgrounds to come in because of the way that our course load works. It's extraordinarily heavy. It's extremely scientific based, and the workload is just quite frankly ridiculous. And if you weren't used to that type of high power scientific academic workload, you could potentially struggle. But I think that it's entirely possible for people of artistic backgrounds to do well, potentially. Good work ethic is good work ethic. And if you had a good work ethic in another program, there's nothing to say that you wouldn't succeed in pharmacy.
Do you consider yourself an artist?
I would say yes, but not in, I consider myself an artist because I love to sing. And I think that when I'm making music and when I use my voice to tell the story of a song, that I'm being an artist. However, that doesn't really have anything to do with my pharmacy practice.
Okay, that's fine. So let's talk about your singing.
Okay.
So when did you first start singing?
When I was a little kid. I can't even remember, probably in church.
You just had a golden voice and the...
I wouldn't necessarily always had a golden voice, but my mom always loves church because she can sing as loud as she wants to and nobody can tell her to be quiet. So I think that she was a good influence on me. And when I was maybe 4 or 5, I entered the children's choir at the church that I grew up in, and that sort of started me off in the realm of singing. And I've been singing in various different choirs and clubs basically since then, so pretty much all my life.
What's your favorite song to sing?
Oh, that changes all the time.
Okay, right now.
Right now, I've had Brown Eyed Girl by Van Morrison stuck in my head for the past several weeks. So I'd say that's one of my current favorites to sing. But it changes every other day.
Mm. Okay. And what's your favorite kind of music to listen to?
I mainly listen to alternative rock.
Alternative rock?
Yeah. I also listen to a lot of EDM because I mainly listen to EDM when I study, because I like to have a driving force that keeps me motivated and focused on what I'm doing.
EDM?
Electronic dance music.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I listen to podcasts by various different DJs when I study, and then when I'm not studying and I want something a little bit more relaxed, I usually go for alternative rock.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot for being with us this week, Stephanie. I look forward to studying with you in September.
All right, see you then.
Keep up the good work.
Thanks.
Midnight, now open my eyes. What a sight to behold. Stars over Tokyo. Would you leave? Oh, stars over Tokyo. Mm-hmm. have I seen Cassiopeia with Tokyo? The belt of Orion over Tokyo. Once flashed over Tokyo to awake from a dream of Tokyo and everything. Of stars begins right where you are in the shroud of the night over Tokyo.
The Westside Community Food Market is back every Thursday at 3 p.m. to 7 p.m. from July 3rd to September 25th. A stretch of sidewalk at 8th and Vine will be turned into a local food market. Join us for hyper-local foods, live music, coffee, and more.
In Indigenous cultures across the globe, women are givers and creators of sacred life. They nurture and shape our children. They influence future generations through the early interactions and teachings they pass on to our youth. These transfers of knowledge are in grave danger as women are common victims of violence, especially in communities where extractive industries are taking place. Violence against Indigenous women and children is one of the most serious violations of human rights, and Indigenous people have to work as equal partners with states to develop standards and mechanisms to enforce women's rights, strengthen their civic and political participation, and protect them from the different forms of violence they are commonly subjected to. We need to bring the issue of violence against women to light and work to uncover the extent of this problem so that we can seek the needed resources to put an end to this grave injustice towards Indigenous women. This series shares the concepts and recommendations contained in the ALTA outcome document. For more information, visit WCIP2014.org.
We'll be right back. Who are you to comment on who I am? What the fuck, man? Fucking prick. Oh yeah? Since when? Who the fuck are you, fool? You'll see. Fucking coward. You're a fucking hater. Fuck out of here. Enjoy hating, you prick. Oh good, you fucking idiot. You fucking with the wrong guy. Sucks to be you. Better watch yourself. Real talk.
Beaver Hour. Tuesdays at 11 p.m. Pacific Standard Time with your host, Emma Rawson.
Rawson. Rawson. Rawson.
Sometimes I think you're probably the finest ship ever to have sailed the Vortex.
Oh, I know, Doctor. This is the end of the world news.
So now we know.
Now we know for sure.
But why are they...
I'm waiting for you.
Indeed we are, Doctor. Thursday mornings from 8 to 10 a.m.
All right, and that was Gianna Loren, Power Failure. That song is definitely going out to Alisa Pompeo in Ottawa for the summer. Alisa, you are missed out on the West Coast, but at least we still have Alisa music. Before that, we heard a band called Hooded Fang, obviously an awesome band, so we heard three tracks. Their intro, called Dry Range In, then a song called Graves, and then the outro called Dry Range Out. And that's all from their album, Graves. Next, we're going to hear from a Manitoba guy. So this is going out to Julie, who's in Winnipeg. Shotgun Jimmy. He's from Brandon, Manitoba. But obviously, he's been to Winnipeg. I mean, if he's from Brandon. So Manitoba from the West.
Everything is different today. Everything makes a little more sense. I'm gonna hold on to that thought until my flesh begins to rot in the cold, cold, in the cold, cold. Anything, whisper in my ear. Go on, anything. My steady mind is clear. And I would search far and wide to find the correct reply. Ask me anything at all.
Thank you, Brandon, Manitoba. So that's it for this week, radio fans. I want to say a special thank you to Stephanie Garland for being with us. We learned a lot. We're going to hear one more track. This is a local band called Dear Rouge. Questionable graphics on the CD, but the album is Kids Want to Know, and the track is Kids Want to Know. Tune in next week, radio fans, to Transition State on CITR 101.9.
We'll be right back. featuring a wide range of music from India, including popular music from the 1930s to the present.
Rhythms.
India.
Alternating Sundays, 8 to 9.